And a very good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Gulskin here with you, along with Kyle.
Hi.
We don't have much time because this show is action-packed, and we have to turn the intro down very quickly, but we are still on the Autobahn, and it actually sort of works because we're going very, very fast on the Autobahn. We have to go very, very fast in this intro because this show uses up every single minute.
Yeah, and there's absolutely no speed limit, so we can go fast.
That's right. That's right. All right, we have to shut up now.
Try to keep up.
Yeah, try to keep up. This is us back in May on Germany's Autobahn Highway on Off the Wall.
Okay, we're recording now.
Cool. Well, we're on the Autobahn in Germany. Actually, kind of at the tail end of our week in Germany in a rental car, which is pretty cool, which is really one of the best ways I've ever seen the country. I'm a little unsure right now if... okay, that guy just flew by. I was going to say, I'm sure if there's a... This is the part of the highway where you can go as fast as you want. We've been driving a lot on various Autobahns throughout the country. They all begin with A and have a number afterwards. And they have sections where you can go really, really fast, i.e. as fast as you can. And that's signified by a sign with a slash through nothing, meaning that there's no speed limit. When there are speed limits, they're still faster than back home. Usually it's like 120 kilometers an hour, which is something like, I don't know, 65, 70, something like that, maybe more. And right now I'm doing only 90 kilometers an hour because I'm in back of a truck. So I'm actually doing about highway speed in New York and most of the country. And someone's passed me right now going a little bit faster, not that much faster. But we've seen some cars going like bullets. But I think I might... ramp it up a little bit.
You're going to take it up to like top speed?
Well, we were doing 200 before. It was pretty, that was pretty scary and fast.
With a video camera?
Yeah, we were video cameraing. Well, the video people get better footage than the radio people. That's just a fact of life. And I'm sorry, folks, if you can't deal with that, that's just how the reality is of the marketplace. We can't give you 200, but we might be able to give you 160, which is about 100 miles an hour. It's no small potatoes. So if you're thinking of tuning out because we're not going as fast as we went on video, I think it would be a mistake because we do the best we can with what we have.
All right, forget all that. So generally the lorries stay on the right.
Lorries being trucks, yes, lorries stay on the right. Cars also can stay on the right. I'm on the right now because I'm not going very fast. But all right, I'll start moving a little faster. I'm getting into the left lane now.
And I'll just say that this is a four-lane road, and we are going up and down. There's some elevation. There's some rolling hills. And it's about dusk now, so we're starting to get into nighttime mode. And that affords us the ability to see cars way off in the distance. They've got lights and stuff. You can also see cars coming up on you quickly. But anyway, bear in mind, there's two lanes in our direction. So you're either in the slow lane, precariously behind very slow trucks, or you're in the very fast lane. Oh, no, wait.
Yeah, there's about to be a third lane. I just saw a sign indicating that this lane will soon be expanding, and I will have a super fast lane. I'm going to take advantage of that right now. Now I'm in lane number 3, and the truck is in lane number 1. Lane number 2 is wide open for anybody to use. I'm doing 140 kilometers an hour right now, and I'm bringing it up. I intend to go up to 160 right now, just like I said I would. And very soon, the radio listeners will be going 100 miles an hour with us as we increase the speed up this hill. And it's, you know, it's funny because the first time we did this, it was really, really scary. And now it's not that big a deal. We're doing 160 almost all the time. When we did 200 before for the video audience, that was something. That was a big deal. But, you know, I bet if we did that a lot, it wouldn't be such a big deal anymore. There are people on this road that do 300 kilometers an hour, which I'm not even sure what that is.
Yeah, I think I blacked out during that. I don't remember much from the...
There's a guy in my tail right now. I have to move out of the way. I'm doing 160, but he came right up on me, and he's passing right now. So he must be doing... What is that? What kind of car is that?
Skoda.
It's a Skoda. It doesn't look very new at all.
It's a Skoda wagon, maybe like early 2000s. But you do get used to it. We were just talking about that. We were having a little break in our driving here, and we remarked, gosh, it's like, it's really wild. You get a little bit used to it. When we first got on the Autobahn, we were really worried about that. These cars coming up at 300 or 200 kilometers an hour, what does that really feel like? Because, again, the conversion to do in your head, it's kind of rough. And then what are all the things you're going to be contending with as far as what's thrown at you from other drivers?
All right, here's a guy passing us. Wow, he's going really fast. We're doing 140, and he's moving as if he was going, say, 45 miles an hour if we were standing still. So do the math, folks. It's good for you.
And he did not signal when he went from lane.
No, he was an SUV. They don't have signals.
Correct.
All right, so I guess we could continue going. We have to turn off at some point, right? So I should be looking out for something. Is there a road? Yeah, 5. Isn't this our turn right here, A5? Pretty sure it is. Should we be looking at something?
I can try to do that. I
think it's that way. Our GPS kind of died on us. It's kind of a funny story, but we're heading north right now. If we're going to be heading west towards the border, then we have to be going left. And that's what I intend to do. Yeah, it's old school. But our GPS that's attached to my phone died because it takes a lot of battery and you can't really charge it in the car. And the car GPS only speaks German and we don't know what it's trying to tell us to do. So we're using what you call dead reckoning, and this guy is really confusing me. All right. That guy merged onto the highway and was side by side with me and wasn't getting in front of me. So now we're heading in the direction of Basel, Switzerland, but we're not going to go that far. And then we'll be on a different Autobahn. We went from A6 to A5. As I downshift here. And maybe we can go fast again. We'll see.
He was driving an Opel Tigra convertible.
Yeah, it was a nice car, but a stupid driver, I think. I shouldn't say that because the drivers here are the best drivers I've ever seen, but there are some nitwits. That does have to be confirmed. Do we have any idea how long we have to go on this road?
I'm going to look,
Would you like me to hold the microphone while I'm driving 120 miles an hour?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Yeah, I was joking, folks. Don't do that. Don't do anything while you're driving this fast other than holding the wheel and gripping it for dear life, because the slightest miscalculation can be really regrettable. It takes concentration, a lot of it.
All right, I'm initiating GPS.
Okay.
Uh, 95 kilometers on this, and the next is AS54 Appenweier.
How far are we from my ultimate destination? Does it tell us that?
109 kilometers.
So that brings us almost there.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
This is the last stretch of our experience on the Autobahn.
That's true. It is. It's about 10 o'clock at night, and our goal is to make it to Strasbourg, which sounds German, but it's in France. Yeah, so it's right on the border, and that's going to be kind of interesting, so I'm looking forward to seeing what that's like. Obviously, there must have been some history involving who ran the city, whether it's Germans or French. We're going to try and get to the bottom of that. Just driving on the Autobahn is kind of relaxing, believe it or not, even though you're going at tremendous speeds. And we're on a three-lane one now, so maybe we can do better as far as speed. I haven't seen a sign yet indicating I can go as fast as I want, so I'm going to keep it conservative at 120. Or wait till somebody passes me, which I think actually is about to happen. Yeah, somebody's coming up on my left right now in the center lane. And, all right, that tells me that I can go faster, too. So I'm ramping up to 140 now. And we are moving westward at this point. Kyle, you drove faster than you've ever driven before on this road.
I did. Yes, I drove at... nearly 130 miles an hour. I believe it was 190 or 183 or so.
I think you drove. You were driving 190, which I think is just about 130 miles an hour, maybe 128, something like that.
Yeah, we were really cooking, and that was a really long late night drive. But we got into a really good groove, and it allowed us to do some other things on our journey, and we caught up a little time, I think an hour at least.
Check this guy out.
Whoa.
Yeah, he's going pretty fast. I'm doing 140 and just zipped right by. You know what? I don't like that. I'm going to catch up to him. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
There's another guy coming up on me right now with his brights on. Holy crap, look at this. All right, you know, we got a little convoy here at warp speed. I'm going to get in the left lane, teach these guys a lesson. Show them what a VW Beetle can do.
About 85 top speed is what a Beetle could do.
We've seen a lot of cool cars, though. Can you maybe outline some of the cool cars we've seen, like we don't see it back in the States?
Maybe. Mostly it's different models of brands we see.
Well, what are we driving right now?
We're driving a Ford Fiesta, I believe. Some European Ford Fiesta sedan.
We really wanted a VW Polo, which you can't get in the States.
Correct. They don't sell that particular model of hatchback Volkswagen. They sell a different one. But you see a lot of different types. And I have a feeling maybe the U.S. market will demand smaller hatchback cars. But I think a lot of the reasons are American safety standards and different things that are required.
Kyle, we're doing 180 kilometers an hour right now. I didn't want to raise my hand to let you know that, because to do that would mean taking a hand away from the steering wheel. When you're doing 180 kilometers an hour, you want to pay extreme attention to the road. In fact, I can't even look at the speedometer right now to see how fast I'm going, but I'm going to try to glance just for a second and see that we're doing 183 kilometers an hour, and this idiot got in front of me, and I have to let go of my accelerator and tap my brake three times because, wow, that was a dumbass move. Okay, he's gotten back into the middle lane now, and I'm going to go back from 140 up as fast as I can. I see some signs there. There might be a speed limit. There might not be.
I think somebody's coming up on
Someone
you.
Is coming up behind me, so I'm going to get into the middle lane, let them pass, because that's what you're supposed to do. That's called courtesy. And, we have somebody coming up. I'm going to let them lead the way, and I'll just fall in behind them. Actually, there's another car behind that. And then we'll resume and see if we can get back up to that speed before that bonehead got in front of me.
Yeah, we're not exactly in one of these real luxury cars. So an economy car takes a bit longer to get back up to speed. We've seen a lot of Mercedes or BMW, a lot of German luxury cars, and some French ones. Opel, I think, is French. Renault, some Citroen, things like that. A lot of station wagons. I think Germans really like their vans and interesting cargo cars and things like that to work or haul things in. Yeah, I don't know. Driving my fastest, that was really a thrill.
All right, back up at 180 now. And I'm going to try and keep this up as long as I can. I have to pass cars in the middle lane. But you really have to pay very close attention to every movement, everything on the road. The road, fortunately, is in very good shape. So you don't have to worry about hitting potholes or horrible things like that really could do a number on a car at these speeds. And even at 180 kilometers an hour, I still have people who are catching up to me in my rearview mirror, but I think I can hold my own here. You do have to watch what's in front of you. How does it feel as a passenger, Kyle?
The ride gets a little stiffer, a little bouncier. You hear the rushing of air and things like that. You're cognizant of the things whizzing by you, curves coming up quicker. I find it's comfortable, though. The newer cars are really feel solid, and this one's no exception. And you're doing a great job. You're holding the wheel, which I appreciate. I wouldn't be too happy if you were driving with your knee.
I haven't blinked in 3 minutes now, and I'm really pretty nervous. I brought it down to 140 only because it was kind of curvy and very dark, so I want to make sure I can see everything before I bring it back up. Now I'm trying to get it back up. Now it's a nice bit of road here, and we're going much faster now. I think we are doing better than those people at NASCAR. I mean, they only get up to, like, what, 40, 50 miles an hour? And here we are doing so much more than that. We're doing, like, 120, 130, perhaps even faster. Do I have that right?
Oh, boy. Yeah, we're going to have to go over this again. So NASCAR is a bit different. They use a mile per hour. And what we're doing here is kilometers per hour.
I knew that. I just thought they didn't go that fast. I thought it was basically a race of moderately moving cars. I have somebody coming up behind me, but I have a problem here because there's a truck to my right, and I can't get in back of him because I'm going too fast. So I'm going to get in front of him. The guy behind me is going to pass me. I'm doing almost 180 right now. Now I'm going into the middle lane, and let's see what happens. Okay, the guy behind me is pretty quickly getting to my side, and he has just passed me. And I'm at 170 now. I'm going to get behind him. And see if he can... Oh, 120 is the speed limit. Guy behind me has hit his... guy in front of me has hit his brakes. We're all slowing down now slowly. I'm down to 160, 150. Sometimes you come up to a city or something and you have to slow down to what would still be considered speeding in the States.
So, yeah, NASCAR is around 200 miles an hour.
Get out. Really? They go that fast?
Yeah.
I just thought they drove crappy cars and couldn't get it above, like, 40 or 50. Okay, I stand corrected.
I think that's right.
All right, well, I learned something today.
Yeah, you got to hold on to the wheel. I find I relax my hands because tensing up, you get fatigued. So I kind of try to relax and go with the shape of the road and try to get very comfortable, find a comfortable rhythm. Because the roads do kind of curve and go back and forth, and it's a nice experience. Whatever speed you're at.
Well, one thing that I find pretty reassuring is the visibility of signs. Even if you don't quite understand what a sign is saying, because they're all symbolic. There aren't a lot of signs with just words on them. You are told if there is a speed limit, it is very clear. In the States, they're words, and they're different from state to state. And they're black lettering on white background many times. It's hard to understand or see if it's against a bunch of other signs. Speed limit signs here, numbers inside of red circles. Very easy to spot. And there's always one on one side of the road, one on the other side of the road. So you can see them a mile away and act upon them. So when I saw that 120, everybody saw the 120 sign. Here's another one we're passing right now. So it's quite obvious what the speed limit is. And all the other signs have little cautionary things telling you not to do certain actions, such as you'll see a red circle with telling you that a truck cannot pass a car. You'll see a truck next to a car So that tells you trucks can't pass cars in this zone. You'll see other signs telling you not to do certain other things, and it's obvious. You know, you don't have to speak a particular language to know what it is they're telling you or advising you about.
Yeah, the signage is helpful. Different, but helpful, and very widespread and consistent. Sometimes you get some weird signs. We saw these really odd yellow shapes that are sometimes... they look a little bit like an arrow, but they're really bizarre looking. And sometimes they're on an off-ramp or... you notice off-ramps and some other areas, there's those shaped yellow diamond shape signs. But it's part of the fun of it. And you really do get the important stuff down quickly.
Yeah, and you watch what other drivers are doing. You just follow their lead. And, you know, we all want the same thing. So they'll keep you safe if you pay attention and know what's out there. Know what's behind you. Know what's in front of you. Know what the hazards are. It's funny, too, because a lot of these cars have warnings equipped inside them. And there's a couple of different types. You're driving along listening to AM radio, which I like doing in foreign countries. But then all of a sudden it switches to FM and there's somebody telling you something. I don't know if it's an announcement, an advertisement, if it's welcoming you to a community or something like that. Lasts about 30 seconds and goes back to your other station. That's one way of interrupting and getting your attention. The other way is the car itself will occasionally chime in and tell you, I believe it's telling you because it's in German and I don't know what it's saying, but I think it's telling you that there's a problem ahead, there's congestion, something is up, and it's just letting you know that. It's kind of funny, too, because we had another GPS system and they're kind of talking to us at the same time, telling us the same thing in two different languages.
Yeah, it'll warn you if there's a traffic camera or something, and they often will compete with each other.
Okay, the speed now has gone down to 100. Now it's down to 80. It's a veritable crawl here. But what's happening is it's a construction zone, so we're moving over to the other side of the highway and doing that thing where you got the oncoming traffic coming at you and you kind of share one side while they rebuild the other side. That's happened a lot. When that happens, nobody can pass and you go a lot slower. And, well, it's considered nap time, really.
So I will point out that we are in the cradle of the automobile. Discuss.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I just got the crap scared out of me because the truck next to me decided he was going to make a left turn into my lane, even though he's not supposed to do that, but I moved out of the way. When you see that signal come on, you move out of the way. So, I don't know, he's in my lane now.
So we're coming up on Stuttgart, which is the cradle of the automobile. Contrary to what a lot of people believe about Henry Ford having invented the wheel, Stuttgart is where I believe Daimler and Mr. Benz created one of the first vehicles. It's either them or Ferdinand Porsche, but regardless, this area is well known for having a lot of those companies and factories here, but also having the history, the early 19th century, mid to early 19th century, when people were first innovating, getting away from carriages and starting to use motorized carts and things of that nature.
Well, one thing we did, speaking of cars, and we did this in the car that we rented, was take a little pilgrimage over to, what was it, Wolfsburg?
Correct.
And Wolfsburg is this amazing place. It's the center of Volkswagen. I had seen it on trains passing by what I thought was just a factory. Had a bunch of smokestacks and a big VW emblem on it. But we drove there, and it's so much more than that. First of all, they give you factory tours. We haven't gotten one of those yet. We will. But it's like a theme park almost, just devoted to the car, the evolution of the car, and just the incredible beauty of it, the evolution, and the varieties. We drove over there one day, and it's, again, it's very easy to reach by train, too. I didn't know there's just so much going on, or I would have gotten off the train in the past. But when we drove over there, we just came kind of late in the day. I think we started at 4 o'clock, but that was still plenty of time to go through an exhibition of all of these different cars dating back to the 1800s and basically wandering around their campus, which... honestly, it's like Google for cars, and I'm sure Google looked at this the Wolfsburg plant, the park, to see just how they could make something interesting and cool. I mean, you were blown away by this, right?
Yeah, later we looked it up. There were 30 architects, I believe, no less than, I believe, 30 architects who came up with the concept for this around the turn of this century. And the idea was to create Auto City, and that is what it's called, Auto Stadt. And basically showcasing the history, showcasing the products of Volkswagen, and the history, and other interesting attributes, related things. There's a whole walkway that illustrates in large square pads the evolution of roads. So every different type of road as it progressed is represented, so you can walk down the road and actually see logs used for tiles, and then bricks and different things. So there's a section with a wooden road, an actual wooden road. I thought that was amazing. But there's so many other things. There's a lot of spectacle, a lot of just really quirky, interesting things, but it's all tied together and very beautiful and has people in mind. They want people to come and learn and just, I don't know, enjoy it as a theme park, but the theme being cars.
Well, there was one, actually there are two buildings there that basically had cars stacked up in kind of a circular garage, must have gone up, I don't know, 30 stories of cars, and there are two elevator mechanisms that literally would be able to just shoot up, grab a car, and bring it down. And that whole process took seconds. Wasn't a whole big thing. You know when AAA comes and tows your car, how long that takes? But from the time that this device slid under a car and had it in the air was maybe about 7 seconds at the most. And these machines were whirling around, just basically grabbing cars, bringing them down, and putting cars up in various places. This is for people that have just bought new cars, and are picking them up at this plant in Wolfsburg. And they do this so that by the time the person gets the car, there is not a single mile on it. So all the movement of the car is done by picking it up and transporting it. And it's just incredible to me how in this country they get things like that to work so perfectly, so seamlessly. Everything from trains to elevators. There was, in this VW park, there was a bridge with rotating flowers on it. And that was completely silent. And it worked perfectly. And it worked completely without any detection of anything mechanical going on. It just was. It was just there. And there are so many examples of that in that place alone, but also throughout this entire country. And I think maybe this highway that we're on right now is an extension of that mentality. Because when you think of it, a lot of kids are going to the Wolfsburg plant and seeing how technology works, seeing how the car is like an amazing instrument of expression, of transportation, of engineering, and they think of ways to make it even better. And I just think it's so cool to see technology working like that, working in the way it's supposed to work, being perfected. And it makes me a little jealous too, because we don't have enough of this back home.
Absolutely. They really do have a handle on keeping things really awe-inspiring and beautiful in the process. So it's not just an afterthought. It's not something they do cheaply to compensate. It's integrated into the design and the philosophy and the mentality, and it really shows. And that was quite an exciting place. That flower pot wheel was really disorienting. When you're standing on that bridge and it spins around, it really is bizarre to think about the universe and space. I just remember looking up and looking at planes moving and that moving and Earth's moving to some degree, and it was just really bizarre.
You know what's really cool about the whole thing too? This is another German thing. We got there actually maybe around 3, but they told us, no, wait till 4 and buy a 7 euro ticket instead of a 12 euro ticket, because when you buy a 7 euro ticket, you have 7 euros credit at any of their restaurants. I couldn't understand the concept behind it. They're telling us, okay, come to this park, pay 7 euros to wander all around it and see whatever you feel like seeing and not even get kicked out when they close. But in addition to that, that 7 euros counts towards 7 euros in any of their restaurants, and they have a bunch of them. So after walking around for a couple of hours, really enjoying ourselves and getting so much out of this, we sit down at a cafe and say, hey, can we have a couple of beers? And, you know, on the card that I got, and of course their cards work perfectly, you know, because you get a nice little smart card when you come into the place.
Yeah, meal card.
Yeah, well, it's the museum entry card, but it's also, you go to a cafe and you say, yeah, 2 beers, and they deduct 7 euro from that. And we had free beer. In fact, we had 2 sets of free beers because you had a card as well. And this is how they roll. Just basically, here, have some stuff. Have some more stuff. Enjoy yourself. Relax. And that's what we did. We were blown away. It was the best time.
Yeah, and as a participant of that, it really just lets you sit back and relax and kind of be imaginative and enjoy it. Just think about everything and sort of a just really cozy outdoor atmosphere. But you're right, there was no pressure, there was no rigmarole about that. They really wanted people there on the site. And I think it works really well as a contrast to the cold mechanical factory, which is also on site. It's just across a body of the water. The 4 smokestacks are really iconic, something we've seen from the train a lot. But by kind of rounding off, like building out that facility and creating something like that for the people that ultimately will be buying cars and make up why the company's there, it's really considerate. And I'm sure it works really well for people who chose the picking up of their car through the Autostadt, because they can sort of check everything out, and then when they're ready, pick up their new car. It's really, really a neat place. Not something you'd imagine in the States at any factory.
No, certainly not at a factory. And even a theme park, I wouldn't see this kind of just relaxation and happiness. I didn't see any litter. I saw a lot of kids running around, just having fun and witnessing all of this. There was even wildlife while we were walking around. We saw a bunch of geese and we saw rabbits and ducks and things like that. They're just sort of hanging out. And wow, that guy's going really fast. That guy's going fast too. Whoa, 3 people. Okay. And 4 people. Wow. I'm doing 140, and they're doing, must be, 180 plus. So, somebody to wake you up on the Autobahn. But, yeah, it was a very relaxing place. And you wouldn't expect that, really, in a theme park or a car factory. But Germany's different.
It was cool to see families and kids there. They're really, you got to wonder what they're imagining, because cars, and we look at cars now and all the technology and the computers and things that are going on, with these complex machines. And here, these kids, that's the first thing they are really exposed to as far as these transportation, magical transportation pods. You've got to wonder what will be next, what kinds of things their kids might see visiting a place like that. But it really is critical. I really hope and would want for industry the kind of outreach that we saw there. Wolfsburg's got some amazing things going on.
And there are a couple other buildings too we didn't mention. There was a building you wanted to go to that had a particular type of car.
Yes.
That was like the most expensive car ever built or something?
Fastest car you can buy.
Fastest car you could buy?
Yes.
But it's also very expensive.
Yes, probably the most expensive. Probably one of the most expensive new cars you could probably buy.
So, tell us about this.
Ah, yes, it's a Bugatti. And the car they were displaying in there, they had a couple of Bugattis on site, older ones and stuff in the museum. But they had an entire building that was the former Bentley building, because that is also a VAG, Volkswagen Auto Group, label. But they rebranded it to the Sport Club or something. And basically, it was where a Bugatti was. But that was it. It was one building dedicated to sport cars, the sportier, more luxury brands. And in this particular instance, there was only one car in there. It was the Bugatti Veyron, I believe. I'm not sure exactly the model.
Yeah, but it wasn't just a car. It was like a source of light. It was really weird. We walk into this building. I expected that we'd see a bunch of cars like we saw in the previous building, which had something like six floors filled with cars from the 1800s, 1900s, and even the 21st century as well. Hang on, I got a guy in back of me who wants to do the speed of sound. We walked into this other building. Why do people flash me? What am I supposed to do? I'm in the middle lane. If you want to pass me, pass me. Well, I don't understand this. Okay, that guy is just rude. So this guy flashes me in the middle lane, goes around me, and then gets in the right-hand lane. Okay, to explain that to me.
Yeah, he's showing you how to do it, because he knows best.
Flashed him right back. Want to start something?
As you should. You gotta flash back. If there's one thing we've learned, we don't understand the communication here on the Autobahn, but we sure as heck participate.
Yeah. You're gonna flash me. You're gonna get something right back. Where were we? We're in that car building, right? I'm sorry. When I'm doing this.
Yeah, the chrome Bugatti.
The chrome. Yeah, it was chrome. We walk in, and basically we just walk around this kind of circular entryway, and there are guides there asking if they can help us, if there are any questions, and there's this brilliantly bedazzled car there that's, like, you know, worth millions of dollars, literally. And, you know, I'm just in awe of the whole thing. It's really amazing. And I walk around and then walk through a door, and we're outside again. That's the whole building, is this one car with a bunch of people watching over it, and I just wasn't expecting that.
Me either. The only other thing that was in there was a hanging neon sculpture, which sort of added, because it was a really abstract neon sculpture, and it added to the luminance of this chrome finish on the Bugatti. So the white lights and the mirrored walls and then this neon sculpture were all kind of playing off the car, which is, you know, playing off the car, which is sort of on a pedestal at an angle, and you sort of go down a ramp around it, and then you walk under the sculpture, and then there's just an engine sitting there, which I guess is the comparable or same engine that's in this car, and a couple people there to help, you know, answer questions or something. But that's about it. And then you walk outside into some other exhibits. And it's a bit bizarre if you're not in the market for a Bugatti. I don't really understand what else it would be for other than a way to to get to entice somebody who is perhaps looking for one.
Well, didn't they just make one?
That was earlier an earlier model. I think it was a Bugatti sedan, and that was from the 2000s or maybe the 90s, late 90s. And it was in the museum part, and apparently only there was only one made. Although we saw pictures of other colors, so we think it either got repainted or they're lying.
Is there a Bugatti hatchback? Because I'd be interested in that.
Not as yet.
Because to do grocery shopping, that's very handy, and I'd want a car that I would be able to move things around on a regular basis.
Wow. Well. You know, if the Bugatti designers are listening, maybe they can make a 3-door model for you. That would be pretty spectacular. Nice wood finish and all that. And really something you could just jaunt over, get your groceries, maybe get some fast food, I don't know, milkshake or something. And then just sort of go driving on the Autobahn and then stop off, get some fresh eggs, and then go back to your farm or wherever you live. Yeah, no, you really should do this.
Pick up the kids at the soccer game.
Yeah, rainy soccer game. So if any of the designers are listening, that's something you should think about. I don't know. Anyway.
So now what else have we done in our car now that we're reaching the end of this particular part of the trip where we're heading towards Strasbourg in France, but we're actually returning the car to a town called Kehl in Germany, spelled K-E-H-L. I don't know if you pronounce it Kehl, but it looks Kehl. And we decided we were going to return it there because it's kind of close to the border. And yet we drove all the way around the country because it's unlimited kilometers, which is very similar to unlimited miles. And, well, what else did we do? We, after seeing the VW plant in, we didn't actually see the plant. Like I said, we're going to go back and see the factory, get the factory tour. But after being in that particular,
I'm sorry. Yeah, we've been doing a lot of things in the car. One of which is walking around in hay fields, and I have hay fever, so that was me blowing my nose. Probably no one will hear that except you when you're editing, but this has been a good car, though. We've been doing all right in the car. We've had some good adventures. As you said, driving all around the country as much as we can. In the city in Berlin, that was completely new. Never done that.
Well, before we went to Berlin, we decided to go as far to the east as we could to a place that I'd passed on a train a couple of times called Frankfurt Oder. And it's not Frankfurt that you might be aware of. It's a different Frankfurt in Germany. And I just wanted to know a little bit more about the history of that place and how it differed from the other Frankfurt. And it's very different in that there aren't very many people there and it's not a very lively place. And we basically had, well, I guess you'd call it a misadventure because we drove across the country and that was fun. We had a great time in the Autobahn getting there. But then we arrived and actually we did stop in Berlin. You're right. We stopped in Berlin to have food because we figured, wow, he's going fast. He's probably doing 210 at least. We figured we'd find food there easier than we find food out in the east, and we were certainly right about that. So we basically just parked the car in a busy street in Berlin, had food at a cafe, and jumped back in and headed east. In that cafe, on my phone, I had reserved a cheap hotel for us to stay at. And after I'd reserved the hotel, it just mentioned that check-in hours are up until 10 p.m. And I had made the reservation at midnight. It didn't mention anything about there being check-in hours until after I had given them my credit card number, which really was kind of disturbing. So we drove out there, and we found the place through our GPS, And sure enough, it was closed, and we couldn't get in, and we had to call two different numbers, finally woke somebody up, who came downstairs, all disheveled, and he had our name, but he didn't have our room. He basically was he said he could give us two single rooms at double the price of the double that we wanted, and that wasn't what I wanted, and it wasn't what I had paid for, or supposedly paid for, so we kind of said, no, we don't want that. And there, you know, no hard feelings, but we had no place to stay. So we drove around Frankfurt Oder a bit. It's called Frankfurt Oder, by the way, not because it has an odor or anything like that. O-D-E-R, it's a river that it's by. They put that in parentheses to distinguish it from the other Frankfurt, which they put something else in parentheses to distinguish it. In any event, we're driving around this small town in the far east of Germany. And I think you're the one that noticed this. I was driving. Or no, were you driving? Was I driving? I forget.
I think I was driving. I can't remember because we switched or something after having the misadventure with this first place where we reserved a room.
Yeah, no, you were driving because we had to drive down trolley tracks and you weren't very keen on that. And I was telling you that's what the GPS is telling you to do. So you better drive on these tracks. And but then we drove over a bridge. And you noticed something that I was busy looking at the directions, but you noticed that things suddenly got very different, and that's when you made a startling discovery.
Yeah, I as soon as we crossed the bridge, noticed a huge roundabout on the other side, and like 70 different signs, all kinds of different signs, not just for each exit off the roundabout, but an entire, just a deluge of signs. And one of them was the, you know how you have a country, like a first letter for a country, and it's in an oval, sometimes people put it on their cars or whatnot. Well, they had street signs like that, and it was a P. And I thought immediately, this must be Poland. Are we in Poland? Is it possible? And as I entertained that and maybe suggested it, well, it sunk in, and we kind of put two and two together eventually.
Yeah, well, you said, are we in Poland? I thought it was the most ridiculous question ever, because I didn't know we were that close to the border. And we were driving around. You see, the wonderful hotel reservation site had recommended another hotel in Frankfurt Oder, but it didn't happen to mention that it was in a different country next door to that city. And so we went merrily on our way over a bridge, and all of a sudden we were in Poland, and it was quite surprising. I didn't know we were right next to the border, and since there's no real border control, it's very easy to simply drive into another country now, and it's very, very different. We knew all of a sudden we're not in Germany anymore, and we tried to communicate with a few people, and it was no go whatsoever, because we realized that, well, maybe we could get into this hotel. And we just had this long conversation with somebody in a parking lot, some parking attendant or guard or something like that. We were trying to, like, park the car so we could see if we could get into this hotel. And I was trying to explain that I didn't know any Polish, and he just kept speaking Polish. And it just went on for a long time. And eventually we just took the car away from the parking lot and went up to the front door. And there was a woman there, and she waved me to the back door, which I didn't know where the back door was. We realized we couldn't have a single conversation with anybody in that place, and it was just really strange and bizarre, and we really wanted to be in Frankfurt Oder anyway, in Germany. We weren't sure if the car was supposed to be in Poland, so we basically went back and just tried to find another place, and eventually we did. We found a big commercial place with an American name that I won't give out because this isn't about advertising, but we were very happy to find it. It was a bit more expensive, but it was open. And we were able to crash, get a room, and they didn't even bother us the next day when it was time to check out. I think since we got in so late, it was like after 4 in the morning, they gave us a break and let us sleep beyond noon. I think we left that place around 2 o'clock. And we realized that's a really good way to treat people. You know, if you check in that late, it's not fair to tell you to get up by 11 or even 12. Some are worse than that. So we just felt very satisfied and happy that we were treated nicely. And that was our Frankfurt Oder experience.
It really was an experience, but you're so so right. It felt great to just not be bugged, because often a lot of those hospitality venues, if I can refer to them as such, they kind of hustle you out and give you the bum's rush. And when you come in really, really late and you're a weary world traveler of sorts, it can be pretty jarring and not so fun to wake up to angry housekeeping people or whatever, especially when we're on an odd schedule and doing late night driving as we were. But it was so bizarre to be in Poland there briefly. But we enjoyed our stay in Frankfurt Oder, and it was a small little place that accommodated us. We saw a lot of neat things around the train station and just noticed as much of the differences as we could. I think a lot of the people actually working in Frankfurt Oder perhaps live in Poland and are Polish and maybe come over to the German side and work, but I couldn't really confirm that. But mainly it was the language barrier. A lot of the people that I interacted with, or at least a couple, were not English speakers by any stretch, and perhaps only spoke German in their job or those kinds of day-to-day activities, as opposed to a German person speaking English sort of regularly and in the course of their day, or going back and forth between both languages.
Well, we spent a little bit of time in Frankfurt Oder, but we really didn't spend that much time, because after staying in that big commercial hotel, we went to the train station, hopped onto the internet, we found a place with free Wi-Fi, which was cool, and did a little research to see if we could stay nearer to Berlin. We were about an hour or so away by car, but if we could actually stay inside the city, that would be better, because there were a number of people we wanted to meet up with, and it was just kind of good to be near a city, and we could take the S-Bahn, the subway, over into the main part of the city if we had to. And we actually were able to find a place that was comparable in price, really cheap actually, that was in Berlin and easy to reach by mass transit. And as we were sitting there making the reservations, we heard all this chanting. And we realized it's like a football chant. We see all these people walking by wearing Borussia Dortmund insignias. And so I went on the internet, looked it up. Sure enough, that very day was a final between Borussia Dortmund and Bayern München from Munich. It was kind of like a rematch of the Champions League from last year, where those two teams met in the final and Bayern München won. They always seem to be beating Borussia Dortmund, it seems. I don't follow this very closely, but I do notice that. So it turned out, yes, in fact, there was a big game that very night between those two teams. And we later found out, after we booked our hotel in Berlin and were hanging out in the city, that the game was taking place in Berlin. So we just seem to keep falling into these football coincidences. We have the Champions League final coming up, taking place between two teams from Madrid the day that we are in Madrid, and that game is being played in Lisbon, Portugal, shortly before we go to Lisbon, Portugal. So a lot of weird coincidences that way. We were in Berlin when the game was being played, and we just happened to stop by and watch. And again, Bayern München beat Borussia Dortmund in overtime. So that was fun. We wandered around Berlin quite a bit, saw all different cities and all different parts of the city, and just explored places that we hadn't explored before. Everything from Tempelhof Airport, where the airdrops were made back in the 60s, to West Berlin, to Kreuzberg, an amazing neighborhood with everything from punks to people from Turkey, to all kinds of just alternative ways of living in Germany. We stayed out very late one night on Saturday when the game was being played. I think, you know, it was kind of like New Year's. We thought people were out partying and drinking beer everywhere. because the game was going on, but it had nothing to do with the game. It was because it was Saturday night. And the next night was Sunday night, and people were a lot more subdued. And both nights, to get back to our cheap place on the outskirts of Berlin, we had to take the S-Bahn, the subway, but it was all messed up because of construction. So you had to take an S-Bahn to one stop, take another one to another stop, then get on a bus, then get on the one that was going out to where we were. And we got good at it. We got really good at figuring it all out, even though the signs were all in German and there weren't people around to help us. And on Sunday when we did this, a little bit earlier than Saturday, because the S-Bahn doesn't run 24 hours on Sunday, we actually got on the very, very last possible train. So we were that good that had we been only a few minutes later, we would have been stuck. We would have been, I don't know what would have happened to us. We'd have been stranded in Berlin, not able to get back, or just having to go through a very complicated procedure to get back.
Yes. There's a lot there. Maybe I think we should get off here at this exit. Well, this is it for the Autobahn. I'm sure we'll have a lot of memories and refer back to this white knuckle ride. But it's getting late here in Germany, and we've got to navigate our way to find some food and rest our bones so we can get back up and do some more exploring in some other countries and towns and fjords.
Und damit verabschieden wir uns.
Bis zum nächsten Mal.
Tschüss.
And that's the end of this week's program that came to you from Germany's Autobahn Highway, recorded last May. Next time, we will be coming to you from someplace in Spain, and we'll have all kinds of adventures on a train there.
Our first time, actually. Mine, definitely, but really, to this part of Spain, almost the southern part, almost down to Africa, right? I mean, we were very close.
We were. But you know what? We're very close to the top of the hour now, and we can't annoy Finn by going into his program, so we're gonna leave now. Write to us, otw@2600.com.
Bye-bye.